Hey, hey, hey.
Hi, hi. It's me. It's Kat.
And it's Julie. Hey.
And we're back.
How y'all doing?
For 2021.
Woo, 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 woo. All right, friends.
Yes, this is going to be take 2.
Take 2 of episode 15. So Kat and I already know what's about to go down here, but it'll be your first time hearing it.
Exactly.
I don't know why, but I feel like every time we are finally getting comfortable with our recording setup, something randomly goes amiss. And
it
then
does.
We have to do
and then
some
we have
sort
to
of weird
record.
Thing.
And then we're sad because we made amazing jokes.
Oh, we were
and
so
they're
funny
lost.
The first time. You guys will never be able to hear it. But ugh. Yeah. So here we are recording episode 15 for you guys. We hope you had a great holiday. Hope it was stress-free, relaxing, no major family drama at the dinner table.
Oof, that's where it gets spicy.
Yes, and if you decided to spend these holidays, I think I said this already in the previous episode, but if you decided to be cautious and spend these holidays by yourself so that, you know, you didn't infect anyone with COVID, more power to you.
More power
and if
to you.
You
thank
saw your
you
family,
for your service.
I hope you were safe about it. So, you know, now we're into this new year, starting hopefully better than the last one did.
Yeah. And like, I've never really been like a person that wakes up and is like, oh, it's a new year. Yay. I'm just like, okay, it's just another fucking day. Let's get this over with.
Right.
And I woke up on New Year's and I was like, why do I feel really good right now? This has never happened before. So I hope this isn't the universe just fucking with me.
Yeah. I feel like this was your body shedding the disgusting skin of 2020.
Yes. And I have emerged from my cocoon.
Yes. That's right. 2021, we're not going to say it's going to be our year, but let's just hope it's better. I mean, I already started this year better than I started 2020.
There you go.
Because 2020, my family and I decided to take a trip to California for the first time.
Back in the day when we could travel.
Back when we could travel. And my sister and I decided to go to a New Year's Eve party, like at a club in downtown LA with one of my cousins and my step siblings. And it was way too much, like for a person that has only ever partied in North Carolina.
In the good old states of North Carolina, Charlotte and Wilmington.
Yeah. The Californianess of it all was just way too much. I think that's my dog barking outside. Hold on. Let me go see if he needs to be brought in. Because I'm with the dogs by myself today.
Ah, yes.
Andy's at work. BRB. So, where was I? Oh, right. So, the Californianess of it all was way too much. And we ended up getting a little too drunk. And the next morning, come to find out, I don't have my phone, I don't have my wallet, I don't have my purse, I don't have
my shoes, phone, wallet, keys.
And luckily, I still had my Apple Watch, so I could track that, like I could track my phone, and it was still at the club in the bathroom from the previous night. But so we went to go pick up my phone, but my wallet and my shoes. Sirius is like breathing. I'm sure you can hear it. Yeah, so my wallet, my purse, and my shoes were still missing. So the whole day we're trying to retrace all of our steps. And then next thing we know, my sister and I realize, like, weren't we asleep in a Jeep at some point? And
I remember getting those text messages.
The car that we were in was definitely not a Jeep. So like, how did we end up in a Jeep? Whose Jeep was it? Turns out that in the apartment complex where my cousin's boyfriend lived, we parked next to like a Jeep that had its roof taken off because it was in like a car garage. And so Raffi and I had gotten into this Jeep to sleep. So Raffi and I passed out in this Jeep and left all of our stuff there. And then when we finally realized that, we went back to the Jeep and everything was still there. So, like, nobody had touched the Jeep. Like, it's obviously New Year's Day. Like, people aren't out and about. So, luckily,
they're also finding their lost phone wallet keys.
Exactly. But everything was there. Best case scenario, I got everything back. But yeah, 2021 is not starting like that, which I think is promising.
That is very promising. Yeah. Like, it's just you're starting the new year right. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, we hope that you can start this journey anew with us. Yes. And forgive us for being a little slack the past couple weeks. I think we are coming into this year a little bit more energized than we did at the end of last year. Just
holy
we
shit,
started
you could
to get
hear
slack.
The burnout. You could yeah. definitely hear the burnout compared to like our earlier episodes.
Yeah.
And then I think when we did Beulah in the Cell Block Tango, we just started we're like, hey.
Yeah, you could tell that we were stressed.
You could tell the year had gotten to us.
Here we are again, and hopefully, you know, we get some of our sizzle back, and keep following us, keep liking our stuff, rate our podcast, give us 5 stars,
please,
you know, boost a serotonin and all of that.
I do have a funny story.
Oh, yes.
About 5 stars. I don't know if I told you this. So, shout out to Dallas. We love Dallas. I don't know if she listens, but hey, girl, we love you. So, So when she was in college, she knew this. So there was a woman that did like photography, and she reviewed her own Facebook page.
Oh my.
On her photography services. And she gave a detailed explanation about why she gave herself 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars. And the 5th star, you know, because the first one, to my dedication, to my, you know.
But did she know skills. That it would show up as her name, like she purposely?
Yes.
Oh, my.
She
okay.
knew. And so after talking about, I guess, her strengths as a photographer, do you know what the 5th star was dedicated to?
What?
The 5th star was dedicated to Jesus. I'm not making this up.
Oh my God.
Jesus died on the cross for that 5th star in her review.
But you know what? If you're not going to support for yourself, who else is going to support
exactly.
you? Exactly.
You got
to love
yourself
first.
Hype yourself up.
Who
it's
else
not
is going to hype
doing.
You up? Exactly.
It is not worth doing. So shout out to her, for that lady, for empowering herself through Jesus.
Shout out to
star.
Jesus for giving her that 5th star. I'm sure she really appreciates that.
She probably did, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, all of those things. And are we ready to jump into the case, or do we have anything else we need to say beforehand?
I think we're good.
I think we're good. All right. So this week I am taking us back into the 1920s, 1930s, Prohibition era New York.
Woo!
And coming out with an outlandish murder tale.
It's so outlandish. We're talking like this is beyond the corruption of jazz and liquor. This is a whole new level.
This is a whole new level of batshit crazy. Like, you can't make this stuff up. I really wish that part of, like, some of these things, I'm like, there's no way this is real, but it is. So, this week we're talking about Mr. Michael Malloy, a.k.a. the man who wouldn't die, a.k.a. Mike the Durable, a.k.a. Iron Mike.
You gotta be pretty fucking incredible to have 3 separate nicknames.
Literally, this man had so many nicknames, and these 3 that I picked were only my favorite. Like, he had at least 5 more. I shit you not, this man was a legend.
And his whole story, absolutely.
Honestly,
legend.
I stan him. I think he was living his best life, and I think these douchebags took advantage, and, well, you will see why.
Yes. So let us proceed with the story.
Let us proceed about the story of Iron Mike. I don't know how to do an Irish brogue, so
Irish
that probably
Mike.
Came off as Russian or something. Hey, so anyway,
you know what? New York melting pot.
New
Somebody
York.
With a Russian accent there.
Hey.
More than likely said his
name. So Michael Malloy was thought to be born in 1873. There was like no known date of his birth. There really wasn't anything known about him. He had no family, no friends, nada. Like, and
Zilch.
Even he really didn't know much of the details of his life because, as we will come to see, he was a raging alcoholic.
Woo!
So the only thing that people did know about him was that he moved to New York from Ireland in the 1920s and that he used to be a firefighter.
But wasn't he like, he was like older when he got to New York. He was like...
Yeah, so he would have been like around 60. He was like in his 60s, 70s, mm-hmm. which is why people kind of assumed that he was probably born in 1873 around.
Yeah.
But again, like... Literally no known records of him. Because I guess at that time it was hard to keep up with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Especially if you, like Mike, are unemployed, homeless, and just like an alcoholic who just occasionally sweeps alleys and collects garbage, like to get money. Or, you know, he was really happy to be paid in alcohol instead of money. You know, you could just give this man a bottle of whiskey and he'd be like, that alleyway.
I can clean that for you.
It's clean. So, yeah, he was having a hard time, but I think Mike didn't see it that way. I think Mike enjoyed his transient lifestyle.
I think he's getting paid with his favorite thing in the world.
Yeah. Like, what else would he have spent his money on? Alcohol. So if he can just skip the middleman and get straight to it, I think he was fine. So during this time, obviously, it was still like prohibition. And Mike was known to frequent this speakeasy on 3rd Avenue in New York City, which was owned by this 27-year-old named Tony Marino.
Tony.
And every day, Tony.
Tony.
Tony. So every day, like clockwork, Mike would go into Tony's speakeasy and ask for another morning, if you don't mind.
Top of the morning to ya.
Oh, yeah. That's not right. Please forgive.
Yeah.
Please forgive me. Yeah. So after he got his morning started with a drink, he would proceed to drink as much as his body could handle before he passed out on the floor. It's just another old day for little Mike.
Just a wonderful day in the neighborhood. Wonderful day in the neighborhood with Mr. Mike.
I'm positive that's the song that played in his head as he walked to the
bar.
It
probably was. He's like, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
Sweeping the alleys for a bottle of whiskey. Take a shot because we tried to sing.
We tried. So because Mike was such a frequent customer of the speakeasy, Tony thought that it would be a good idea to let him drink on a tab. You know, he may not have all the money right now to pay for his drinks, but later
he has no money.
He's
getting paid in alcohol.
Tony was dumb for letting him do this in the first place because eventually Tony realized that Mike would never be able to pay back any of the money that he was spending and
he's
drinking
on this
tab.
He's not going to give up his hard-earned bottle of whiskey. He cleaned
that
alley.
Exactly. Exactly. He earned it with his hard work, sweat, and tears. So when Tony realized this, he told his friends, Francis Pasqua and Daniel Kreisberg, like one random afternoon in July of 1932, was just saying like, hey, I'm hemorrhaging money from this guy. I'm afraid that my speakeasy is going to shut down. I need to do something about this to make this money back.
We need to put together a team.
That's right. We need to assemble a team of New York's finest scumbags, finest funeral attendance. That's what he said. Because Mr. Francis Pasqua, who was 24 at the time and was an undertaker, so he was in the funeral business.
He knew how to get rid of bodies.
He knew how to.
That's pretty much his role. He's the body guy.
That's right. So he threw out this idea of, you know, why don't we just take a life insurance policy out on him and help him die the way that he lived, die a happy death, and help him drink himself to death. You know, this is when Tony looks over at Malloy and says he ain't got much longer to go anyhow, so he agreed to go with the plan. They were now in cahoots to take a life insurance policy out on this man. And life insurance policy out on this man and kill him and make it look like an accident. So when I was reading this, I was like, you know, this is, you know, murder isn't like the first thing my head goes to whenever I'm trying to think of how to make more money. Like, it's just not my first thought, but I guess it was for them.
You know, it's the 1920s New York. Anything is possible if you anything just believe. Anything is possible. That's the American dream. Killing someone for insurance money.
Yeah. I mean, So yeah, while this seemed like a totally outlandish plan from somebody just like hearing about it, to Tony, it really wasn't that crazy because he had already done this once before. In fact, just the year prior, Tony had become friends with a homeless woman named Maybelle Carson and convinced her to take a $2,000 life insurance policy and name him as the beneficiary.
Oh, so that's not suspicious.
Yeah, for some perspective, in today's dollars, that policy would be worth $34,241. So it was kind of, yeah.
If we got a stimulus that was $34,000.
We would literally all just be able to stay inside and wait until this virus passes over instead of people having to risk their lives every day for a $600 stimulus that does not even cover
a one time.
Even get us started. We're very upset. We're very upset. 'Cause we're broke.
Yes.
So broke bitches.
Broke boss bitches.
Love it. 2021 will be over though. No, just kidding. Knock on wood, taking it back. So Tony pulled this plan off by on a cold New York night. He got Maybelle really drunk by force feeding her alcohol.
Ooh.
He stripped the clothes off of her and drenched her mattress and sheets in ice water and pushed it under an open window. So that night when Maybelle, you know, fell asleep, she contracted bronchial pneumonia and died shortly after. Of course, Tony collected the insurance payout from this without any problem. Like, there was no investigation. It seemed like an accident.
She just froze to death.
She's right. So, you know, he thought after having done this himself, you know, I could do it again. This seems like a good solution. He's got no friends, no family. Nobody's going to miss him. Easiest way to come up with this money. So that's when the three of them get into this pack together, but then realize, you know, maybe they're going to need a little bit more help.
They need to expand the crew.
Yes, they need more hands on deck. So they enlist Joseph Red, you know, quote unquote Red, I guess that's what he went by, Murphy, and Hershey Green to the plan. And they agreed to split the money evenly between the five of them. And this is when they would become known as the Murder Trust.
I prefer the Malloy Five.
The Malloy Five.
Five just sounds like so, like, that's got power to it. Like, that sounds like a team that would get stuff done, but they, that's not where this story goes.
No. So, the Malloy Five, they each had their different roles that they played, right? So Pasqua was handling like the insurance side of things. He met with several insurance agents and even like brought another random person into the plan who is unnamed. We don't know who this acquaintance was, but he got him to pose as Michael Malloy. But they, when they went to the insurance companies, they put the insurance policy under the name Nicholas Mellory.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy pretended to be Nicholas Mellory. They enlisted the help of like a compromised, sketchy insurance agent who helped them with their plan. And they were able to secure three separate policies for Mellory. Each of these policies had double indemnity on them if Nicholas Mellory / Michael Malloy died due to accidental causes. I don't know anything about insurance terms.
I don't either. No.
And I don't know if y'all know. I don't know. So I had to look this up, what double indemnity meant. So pretty much this meant that each of these policies would pay out double the face amount that they put into the policy. So like, I think the policy was $3,576. And so they would get double the payout from that if he died of accidental death.
Yeah.
Right. So this meant that the murder trust couldn't just like shoot him or, you know, just like beat him up or something. They had to make it look like an accident. So next we have Joseph Murphy. His role in all of this was to pretend to be Michael Malloy's next of kin. I think they pretended he was like his brother or like a sibling of some sort.
He's the actor of the group.
Yes, he is the actor. So his role eventually would be to identify Michael Malloy's deceased body and claim to be his next of kin and be named as the beneficiary of the policy.
With like the acting standards of the 1920s, that would have been a breeze. My God, right. George, no! Like, whatever. Or Michael.
My brother! Exactly.
They're like, God, this man's in mourning.
So if everything went according to plan, the main Malloy five would split the $3,576 life insurance payout evenly between them. So in today's dollars, this is a sum of $67,925. So quite a big amount. Definitely enough to cover the expenses of the speakeasy. I think Pasqua at one point says that he only did it to support for his, like to provide for his family. You know, it's a tough time for everyone. Murder is just not the right way to go about doing it.
No.
I feel like. But yeah, so that was their plan. And as the plan continued to evolve, they started to let more of the bar's patrons in on it. Just like, keep your fucking mouth shut. Why are you telling more people?
Like, the Malloy 5 is now the Malloy 30.
Literally. And, you know, Tony runs a speakeasy. So sometimes he didn't have the most reputable clientele there. So the next three people that they added, the next four people that they added to this plan were all like known petty criminals, thieves and burglars and that kind of stuff.
Shady characters that will keep the story.
That's right. So at this point, they add John McNally, Edward Tin Ear Smith. Don't ask me why his nickname is Tin Ear. I feel like they wrote something about it in the article I read, but I didn't write it down. I don't know. I should have. It would have been a fun fact to include. Also, they included Tough Tony Bastoni.
Bastone.
However you know, pronounce that last name, but I think we can all agree that he was Italian AF.
Yes.
And finally, Joseph Maglione, also very Italian.
Why did I say that with New York Italian?
New York Italians, you know, the mafia.
Shady characters.
So they got their task force assembled. They are now like 9-10 people deep in this fucking plan. And finally, on one night in December of 1932, they all met, got together to finally put their plan into action. They
got to send out the invites. All right, is everybody reserved for our meeting tonight?
Let's synchronize the watches. We're going to meet in the alley that under the light that flickers. You know, the one next to the pizzeria.
Then they got to do roll call to make sure everyone's there so everyone is on board.
Oh, yeah. To say this was a harebrained scheme is like an understatement. So they decided that when Mike Malloy would go into the bar that night, they were going to grant Mike like an unlimited tab. They would just let him, because he was such a good customer, they were just going to let him drink,
you know,
on an unlimited amount of credit.
He was a model customer.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to reward him for his years of service.
Exactly. So, you know, Mike walks in, hears this, he's overjoyed, and he gets right to it, right? So he's drinking down these whiskey and gins, and Tony is refilling his glass over and over, like, as soon as Mike is done with them. But Mike, being the good Irishman that he is, the Iron Irishman.
The OG Iron Man.
Yeah. He held his liquor perfectly well and walked right out of the bar, promising to be back soon.
Thanks for all the free alcohol, guys.
See you in a bit. And within 24 hours, little old Mike was back at Tony's speakeasy.
Round two. Let's go.
So for the next 3 days, Mike Malloy kept drinking like this. So this had the murder trust at a loss. They were like, how has this guy not choked on his own vomit or like fallen and slammed his head and died yet? They were just not sure what to do, because on the fourth straight day of binge drinking till he passed out, Mike stumbles in to the speakeasy as if nothing was wrong and goes, boy, ain't I got a thirst.
Boy, I got a thirst today, fellas.
Just like that. Kat will be our Irish interpreter from now on, because I am
certified by the imaginary certification board on the internet.
Yes.
I'm also ordained.
You took a class. Yeah.
So if you would like me to ordain you.
She has the power.
I have the power. I will ordain you in an Irish accent if that is what you fancy.
I love that. Please ordain my wedding in such a manner.
And I'll just weird out your whole family.
That's fine. They can be weirded out if they want. So after these 4 days of Mike binge drinking, Tony is starting to get impatient. He just thinks that giving him alcohol in unlimited quantities is just not going to be enough for him to drink himself to death. So Joseph Murphy steps up to the plate and he suggests a more subtle solution to their problem.
He's the fixer.
He's the fixer-upper. So he suggests that they exchange his whiskey and gin with wood alcohol.
And what is wood alcohol, Julie?
I am so glad you asked, Catherine. Wood alcohol is methanol. It is used to create antifreeze for your car and fuel. It is poisonous to humans.
Really?
Yeah. Only a drink with only 4% wood alcohol could cause blindness in humans.
That sounds a little dangerous.
Yeah. And it's not like these men were like, yeah, we're just going to give Mike some mixed drinks with a little bit of wood alcohol.
We're going to ease him into it. Yeah. We got to get him ready. We got to prepare him.
That is not what they had in mind. So the next day, Tony goes and buys some cans of wood alcohol at his local paint store.
Because we all buy our beverages.
Store.
From the paint store.
What?
Don't you you go into the store, you see a refreshing can of white paint, you know that's going to hit the spot.
I bet you there's like a My Strange Addiction episode to I drink paint or some shit.
There was
like that.
A woman that drank nail polish.
See.
And then there was one woman that actually drank gasoline. I feel like she and Michael would have been like best buds at the bar.
They would have been best buddies. That's right.
Because she also, fun fact, she also had memory loss. So I feel like they would just be there to balance each other.
They would be soulmates, honestly.
Yes, they would have been best of buds.
Yeah, so that night, Tony's ready with the wood alcohol. When Mike walks in, he starts off by giving him some cheap whiskey to get, you know, get him start feeling good, throw him off his
defenses. Get the ball
rolling.
Let loose. Yeah.
So once Mike is a little limbered up with some cheap whiskey shots, he starts to switch his drinks to wood alcohol.
Because he'll never suspect a thing.
He'll never suspect a thing. He's already drunk. But Mike chugged several shots and kept asking for more.
Another shot, another round.
He displayed no physical symptoms of wood alcohol poisoning and behaved just as if he was drunk like normal.
That's fucking wild.
This level of alcoholism is frightening to me. Like, your body can just is so used to having that much alcohol in your system that poison is literally not affecting you.
He's like a long-lost Marvel hero.
Yeah.
Stan Lee wasn't there to document the original Iron Man.
Petition to make Michael Malloy an Avenger.
He'll outdrink Thanos.
That's how we get rid of him. That's how we save the galaxy.
Yes.
Get fucking Star-Lord out of there. He's useless.
Fucking Star-Lord.
We gotta count on our man Iron Mike.
Iron Mike with the wood alcohol.
Yeah, so day after day, Mike kept going back for more unlimited amounts of wood alcohol until one night, without any warning, Mike collapses on the floor.
No!
The men think this is it. It's worked. It's time.
Tony!
He's about to take his last breath.
It's time!
This is when Pasqua kneels by his body and starts to check if he's breathing. So he notices that Mike is breathing, but it's very slow and it's very labored, and all of them are just waiting intently for him to take his final breath. So imagine their shock when this man starts snoring. This motherfucker fell asleep. And
honestly, Michael's a bad bitch.
He's a bad bitch and can't nobody tell him anything. Not even Kat can handle her alcohol like that. Kat can outdrink me, but she could not drink Mr. Michael Malloy.
No.
So he wakes up a few hours later, you know, rubs his little sleepy eyes.
Refreshed, renewed. Ready for what the new day of free alcohol is going to be like.
Yeah. And he just says, give me some of the regular old, milad.
Milad? What a badass.
You know, he's got that fighter spirit in him.
He does. That's why he would make such a great Avenger.
Yes. So, after all of these murder attempts that have gone wrong, Tony is realizing that this is getting really expensive. He's having to buy tons of wood alcohol. He's having to spend or give away pretty much lots of his own alcohol. And he was like, yeah, this is not working. So maybe we should just use brute force to kill him. So like beat him up or something.
Yeah, who cares if it's not natural and we get double the money, even though we've already over budgeted this murder.
Way over budgeted. But you know, Pasqua, always the voice of reason, suggested, again, a subtle approach that would allow them to claim the accidental cause. So apparently, Pasqua had just recently read like a newspaper article about a man who passed away because he ate oysters that had been soaked in alcohol for too long. And I guess because oysters break down so slowly, the alcohol was like highly concentrated in his body for days, and then it killed him. So he was like, this is the perfect plan. Like, let's soak some oysters in some denatured alcohol for a few days and feed them to Mike.
He's not gonna know.
And have him drink it down with more wood alcohol.
Because at this, you know, I feel like you already know the wood alcohol is not going to kill him. Let's just top off our new attempt with wood alcohol.
Yeah, like, let's just raise the stakes a little bit.
Yeah, we're just going to, we're going to go up the ladder step by step.
Step by step. So yeah, at this point I wrote in my notes that I feel like for people who don't want to lose more money on this murder attempt, they chose to go with the most expensive plan possible. Yes. Oysters are expensive. They're like, I feel so like no expensive. Matter what time you lived in, oysters are a delicacy.
They are. And then on top of the money you're spending on oysters, alcohol, and wood alcohol, you have all these people in the bar that are expecting their share of the profits.
Yeah. Motherfucker, you are hemorrhaging money right now. This is not the way to go. Murder in general is not the way to go, but don't murder somebody if you can't afford to murder somebody. No, just kidding.
Good. Tell that to your accountant. Can I afford to murder someone this year on my tax return?
That's what I'm going to use the stimulus check for. No, just kidding. Don't.
We're joking. Don't do that. For legal reasons, we are joking.
For legal reasons, we are joking. So the murder trust prepares these oysters and serves them to Mike with some wood alcohol. And once again, Mike Malloy proves to truly be made of iron because he ate all them bitches, drank it all down without an issue, and licked his fingers and burped when he finished.
A boss ass bitch.
Yep. So once this plan failed, Murphy decides to take a stab at it, coming up with another plan. Because at this point, killing Mike had become just as much about pride than it was like about the policy payout.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They could not feel emasculated. They had to kill this man at this point or their pride was going to be hurt.
They had to punch the drywall in that frat house. This man had to die.
He had to die. So Murphy's plan was to leave a can of sardines out to rot for a few days because, you know, rotten fish easily can kill you.
Oh, yeah.
But if that wasn't enough, just to make sure that he died this time. A little
cherry on top.
He mixed some shrapnel in it so that when he ate it, it would shred up his organs.
Yeah. I mean, that's... We've escalated a couple of steps, but that does sound like a more efficient solution than feeding him something that has been clearly not been able to kill this guy.
Yeah. So they all agree to it, and they leave the sardines out to rot, mix it with the shrapnel, and put the sardines in a sandwich. They give it to Mike for him to eat. To wash down with some wood alcohol, of course.
Of course. It's not a meal without the wood alcohol.
Right. But guess what?
What?
Mike finished the meal and asked for another sandwich.
I love him.
This man was insatiable.
This man, oh my God. What an icon.
You have to respect the spirit.
You
the spirit
do.
In this man.
I mean, he doesn't know these people are trying to kill him. He probably thinks, oh my God, these people
are giving me free drinks.
They're giving me free food. It just keeps coming and coming. He's living his best life.
Exactly. He had no idea of the nefarious plans of the murder trust, the Malloy Five. So after, like, all of these plans failed, the murder trust, or the Malloy Five, as we are referring to them as, they called an emergency meeting.
The emergency town hall meeting.
emergency townhome.
Get the Malloy Five. Get all the bar patrons. The insurance policy people we've agreed to pay off. Let's go.
They were desperate AF at this point. Tony, at this point, is like, listen, I've done this before. Let's just do the same thing that we did to Maybelle to Mike. Maybelle. And they were like, well, I guess you're right. Like, that was effective and we failed with every other attempt. And it's free.
It is.
Like, why didn't we try this before the oysters? Who knows? Anyway.
Who knows?
So that night, after Mike had passed out from drinking in the bar, Tony and Francis drag his body and throw him in the backseat of Pasqua's car, and they drive about half a mile away from the speakeasy to Crotona Park, where they dragged him through the snow, found a random bench, stripped his clothes off, poured bottles of water on his chest and head, and left him on that bench to die overnight.
Whew.
They were sure that this was it. So
yeah.
The next morning, Tony's walking up to his speakeasy to open for the day. He's feeling good.
This man is dead. He's going to get his money.
Yeah. He pulled off the fraud of the era. Like, he is feeling happy. That is until he arrives and finds that Mike Malloy is perfectly alive in his basement. Mike had come to the speakeasy early that morning, like, half frozen, and guilted Murphy into letting him in. So they let him stay there and take his time to defrost, pretty much. And once he's, you know, renewed, refreshed, frosted up and frozen, he only complained of having a wee chill. Just a wee chill.
Okay, but you know, I think this would have... Okay, so, like, obviously, this man drinks, he goes to sleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why not just take a pillow and smother him while he's sleeping? You know?
Excellent question.
Thank you.
I don't have a good answer for that.
Feel like... because, like, back then...
Maybe they just thought... I feel like maybe they just thought that the... most probable way for it to look like an accident is to have alcohol, like so much alcohol in his body.
That does make sense.
But clearly that wasn't working. And so they had to, you know, stoop down to other measures, which that one would have been a great measure.
It would have. Yeah. You smother him and then you leave him in the snow.
Yeah, but I think these guys were like, trying so hard to be clever about it that they lost
just wasn't
sight almost
working.
And like just put together these half thought out harebrained schemes that
to
just
prove
kept not working.
Their manly intelligence.
Exactly. So let's continue on with the story and see what they come up with next. So after this didn't work, now John McNally, one of the seedy characters in the bar, he convinced them that they should run him over. I mean, that's technically still considered an accident.
An accident, yeah.
If that happened, you know, with a cab, for example. Which is exactly what they did. Because they got this cab driver named Henry Green to help them. And they promised him a $150 cut from the payout. So once again, we see this payout stretching thinner and thinner.
And thinner and thinner. Yeah.
So the Malloy Five, like the core five people, they pile into Green's cab with Malloy like laying across their feet. Like I imagine
a clown car.
Yeah, a full on clown car scenario at this point because there's so many of the motherfuckers. So they drive down the street or they drive down like a few blocks into this residential area. And they have Bastoni and Murphy who drag Malloy's body down to the end of the street and prop him up, each holding him by his arms, like outstretched crucifixion style.
Jesus. That's Jesus dying for the fifth star.
Full circle.
It's full circle.
And they had Maglione in the cab with Harry Greene to kind of like be on the lookout and make sure, you know, let him know once everything was good to go. So they're holding him at the end of the street, and Harry Greene starts revving up his engine, ready to start driving towards Malloy. And so he starts going, driving about 45 miles per hour.
The music for The Passion of the Christ swells in the background.
But Maglione at this time thinks he sees like a light flicker, like of a car. So he yells for them to stop, and they wait a minute, but it turns out it was only like a light that was being turned on at a house nearby. So they're good to go. They reset, and Harry Greene gets in his car and starts driving fast towards Michael Malloy again.
Meow. That's my car and impression.
Somehow, Mike Malloy regains enough consciousness to move out of the way of the car.
He's an Avenger! He is an Avenger!
The human intuition type shit, like, just like having enough survival instinct to dodge the car.
That's
crazy.
That is Avenger shit right there. Oh my god, could you imagine him like fighting Thanos instead of this, you know, the scene in Endgame where it's Captain America? It's just our boy Michael, and he's like half drunk, asleep on the ground. You know, Thanos goes in for the final blow, and he just grabs the wrist and is like, "Not today, me boy."
Let's remake the ending to the Avengers Endgame.
That's the deleted scene. That was supposed to be the original ending.
And then they decided to kill. Never mind. I won't go into it. I'll get emotional. Anyway, so they're not going to give up, right? After their first attempt, they're like, okay, he got lucky. He moved out of the way of the car. So they're going to try a second time. They hold him upright again. Harry Greene backs his car back up down the street and once again starts heading for Mike Malloy. And once again, this man has some sort of survival instinct left and dodges the car again.
Oh, it's so cinematic.
So I feel like at this point, these guys have to be really fucking irritated that they can't hit this guy. So they decide to try one third and final time. They're like, people, we will hit this guy.
Yeah, and I mean, these people are probably experienced in the art of killing. So imagine how fucking frustrating that must be. You literally have your guy in front of you.
Yeah.
And you can't even run him over. That
like,
must have,
he's like only semi-conscious from drinking alcohol. He's old. He's withering away. And y'all still can't hit him?
Can you imagine, like, the other mobsters in New York talking shit about them, like, Mean Girl style?
They had a
book with them in it.
Yeah.
Fucking idiot can't even run over a guy with a car.
Yep.
Fugly. Slut. Hitman.
The Malloy Five are fugly broke sluts. Don't trust them to kill anyone. They cannot get the job done.
Oh, I love it.
Which only rings more true with their last attempt.
Oh.
Because this time they do hit him. And Green even backs over him, you know, for good measure.
Little double tap.
And you know, that you would think that at this point they would know better and would stay and verify that this actually worked.
But they didn't.
Because right at this point, they see a car driving by, so they flee the scene, and they just, you know, were like, okay, this had to have worked. And for a bit, it seemed like maybe it did work, because for about 5 days after the incident, they had not seen Mike again. This is where they enacted the next part of their plan.
Phase three.
That's right, phase three.
Phase three of the Malloy Five.
So this is when Joseph Murphy starts pretending to be Nicholas Mellory's brother.
The actor comes in.
Yes, and starts giving calls to morgues and hospitals to see if they can find out any information on his brother's whereabouts. But none of these places that they called had any information on him. And like I said, 5 days had passed before Pasqua decided that they needed to produce a body to show the insurance agent if they were going to still get this policy. So Pasqua was desperate, and he thought that they just needed to kill any random drunk to pass him off as Nicholas Mellory.
Yes.
But before they could proceed with that part of their plan, guess who limped into Tony's speakeasy, all battered and bandaged up, but very much alive?
Our hero!
Our hero, the one and only.
Our hero has returned!
Michael Malloy. So Michael Malloy walks in and he tells them what he recalls of the night.
Ooh.
He says he remembers the taste of whiskey, the cold slap of the night air, the glare of rushing lights, and then blackness.
The dramatics of it. Oh, my heart.
Next thing he knew, he woke up. Who woke up? English. What is she? Next thing he knew, he woke up in a warm bed at Fordham Hospital and only wanted to get back to the bar.
Wait, he wanted to get back to his friends, where there was free alcohol, free sandwiches.
Exactly.
He had his heart set.
You know, at this point, we don't know exactly the timeline of when all this happened, like specifically the dates.
Yeah.
But we do know that finally, on February 21st of 1933, a full 7 months after the murder trust first met to put together their plan.
7 months trying to kill one man.
Yeah.
Oh, you know they put that in the Mafia Burn book.
Absolutely. They will go down as the stupidest mobsters to ever have set foot in New York City.
Oh.
So Mike Malloy died in a tenement apartment where he was living that was just like less than a mile away from Tony Marino's speakeasy. And the way that he died was not an accident.
They finally had enough.
They cracked, I think. They cracked. They could no longer chance it to keep coming up with these schemes that may not kill him. So what they did was they ran a rubber tube from a gas light fixture to his mouth and tightly wrapped a towel around his face to kill him from gas
poisoning. They Midsommar'd
that bitch. But, you know, they were never going to collect the policy if it looked like he was murdered.
Yeah.
So they had to bring someone else into the plan.
Another round!
And this time, it was a pathologist. Because they had to have this pathologist declare a phony cause of death. So you know the price is going to be sky high.
It's going to be a little hefty.
Yeah. So they found Dr. Frank Manzella and bribed him with $800 to declare pneumonia as the cause of death.
They really went over budget. They really went over budget.
Who was in charge of making the Excel spreadsheet to budget their costs?
Like, whoever did their accounting for mafia-like business, I mean...
Fired.
If it took them 7 months to kill a guy, he was probably like, all right, I'm not gonna work for these fellas anymore. I'm gonna let them... We're going to watch their downfall
recorded
in the burn book.
So, yeah. So they finally killed him. They did what they had to do. And it's time to collect their life insurance policies. So Pasqua goes to the first life insurance company where they took out the first policy. And only ended up receiving $800 of the policy money.
Oh, to pay off our wonderful doctor.
Yep. And so after they split up that first round of money, it apparently was only enough so that Murphy and Marino each spent their share of the winnings on a new suit. That's how much money they had.
That's like $5.
Yeah. So Pasqua went to the other insurance company where they had placed the other two policies, and he was expecting to secure the bag with no issues, just like the first one. But it seems like our shady insurance agent decided not to be so shady after all and asked him, when will they be able to see the body? Oof. And this is when Pasqua replies, oh, it's already been buried. Because, you know,
they so murdered him. I'm so deep in mourning that we just went
had to bury him immediately.
I was just so sad. So very sad.
Yeah. So clearly this was sketchy as fuck to the insurance agent. And because, you know, if you know that you might have to show the body to collect the payout, you would make sure.
Oh, yeah.
That you don't bury him first. Like, you're if you knew that Grammy. This was. Yeah. So the insurance company started an investigation. And this is when everyone in the town starts talking about Mike the Durable. In all of the speakeasies, in all of the bars, people are talking about this, like, incredible tale of
this superhero
who would not die, but finally met his death. Because they all thought it was an accident, like, of pneumonia.
He just happened to, like, choke on a tube full of gas.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is when the police caught wind of the rumors. They were like, they're all talking about a man who won't die, Mike the Durable, but this man, Mike Malloy, just died. Something's so they thought that off. This was fishy, and they started their own investigation. And there really isn't any details in the sources that I read about, like, how the investigation was conducted. I guess just because it was so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, like, for reference, I got most of my information from the Smithsonian magazine. They wrote, like, a whole detailed article about the timeline and everything that happened. So just shout out to them, because it was very thorough. It was, like, the most thorough thing that I found. Yeah, so they started their own investigation and were eventually able to get his body exhumed and have it forensically examined. Obviously, when that happened, they saw that it was not pneumonia that killed Mike Malloy, but that it was murder.
Murder?
Murder.
We're talking about murder on Miss Murder? Oh my god.
A twist.
I'm in shock right now. Our Avenger has fallen.
He has. He has. A moment of silence. Why would you laugh during our moment of silence?
Because I'm a fucking terrible person.
You're awful.
I'm awful.
But anyway, so all five men of the Malloy Five were put on trial. Harry Green, who was the cab driver, he went to prison for being an accessory. And the other four men, Daniel Kreisberg, Tony Marino, Francis Pasqua, and Joseph Murphy, received the death penalty by electric chair. They also were able to charge Dr. Manzella as an accessory, but that was, like, at a later trial. And the Malloy Five finally saw their end on June 7th, 1934, when Kreisberg, Marino, and Pasqua all died by electric chair at Sing Sing Prison in New York. And Murphy, just a month later, on July 5th of that same year. And that, my friends, is the story of Iron Mike Malloy. May his soul rest in peace. A bad bitch. A boss bitch.
He's a girl boss.
He's a girl boss.
He's a girl boss.
So now that we finished the story, it's time for our ABCs.
Crime. We still gotta love work on it. That. It's fine.
We got it. We gotta come up with a jingle, like a we set do. Jingle. It's fine. It's fine. I think we can come up with random tunes for now.
Yes.
So this week's episode is brought to you by the letter H for haters, as in don't let them haters slow you down. Be like Iron Mike Malloy. Be the girl boss of your dreams.
Be the... Yes. I don't know what I'm gonna say to that.
Literally have that fighting spirit and exactly. don't give these trash ass men the satisfaction do of not. Killing you. Do not. Let Make them hemorrhage suffer. All of their money.
Exactly. Be a girl boss. Make them spend all of their money on you. And they don't get the outcome they want.
Hashtag waste their time 1932. Oh, love it. Waste his time, girl. Waste his time.
Waste his time.
So, yeah. We hope you enjoyed this crazy, crazy ass case. And we hope you continue to listen and follow and rate.
Subscribe. And be sure to do all that and join us fellow girl bosses on Miss Murder.
Yes. And you know what? Stay tuned because we have some things in the work. Hopefully, we will have a Patreon set up very soon.
Yeah.
We're going to catch up on our Instagram and socials after this hectic holiday season. Kat works retail, so she's been going through it. We forgive Kat.
Thank you.
We forgive Kat. She's had a rough time. People are assholes during the holidays, especially to retail workers. Don't be an asshole to retail workers.
There's no reason. Because people don't realize you get away with more stuff when you're nice.
Literally.
Like, you literally will get so much more stuff if you are nice and understanding.
You catch more flies with honey.
Exactly.
Ugh.
Reel that man in with honey, then waste his time.
Waste his time, like our men's Mike Malloy did.
Yes.
So yeah, that's all we got for you tonight.
That is.
Or today.
This evening.
All
that jazz.
So all we got left to say is good night, friends.